Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Do you know what it means to be hungry? What about to go hungry, to not know where your next meal will come from or what that meal will consist of? Well, some of you don't, but for so many families in the D.C. metro, they are all too familiar with having an empty belly and an empty pantry. And a great many of them are hiding in plain sight. They are your neighbors. They are in your churches, in your clubs, and they have children who go to school with your children. Well, tonight, we're previewing our annual Food to Feed 2019 Radiothon. It is tomorrow from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. And we have two organizations in the studio with us right now to talk about the effort. Radha Muthiah, she is the CEO of the Capital Area Food Bank, and Jennifer Ayers, Executive Director of Alive Incorporated. Shabak Ministries continues to support our efforts in Prince George's County, but they were not able to join us for the program tonight, but you will certainly see them out and about on tomorrow. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. However, you are also invited to contribute right now, because our website, WHUR.com, is taking donations for Food to Feed 2019. Certainly, we encourage you to listen to the radiothon and to have us, to hear us address the many issues around hunger in the DMV. But if you want to contribute right now, we certainly would welcome any contribution that you are able to make at WHUR.com. It's right there on the website. Don't have to look for it. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Why is this still a need, Radha, in the D.C. metro? I mean, you know, the economy's doing, you know, well. Stock market, 28,000, and the employment rate is at historic lows. So why are people still going hungry?
Thank you for starting us off with that question, because it is a really important one. You're right. The region is growing, and it's growing rapidly. We see lots of different companies moving to the area, headquarters being established here. But that growth is only touching a few in this area. It's not touching everyone who lives and resides in our region. In fact, there are close to 400,000 individuals in the greater Washington area who are hungry and are food insecure. And when I say the greater Washington area, that is the entire District of Columbia, Montgomery County, Prince George's County, and Northern Virginia, from Fairfax, Alexandria, Arlington, Prince William, Manassas, etc.
Well, we're not talking about homeless people here. We're talking about people that are working, aren't we?
We are. Mm-hmm. In fact, of the 400,000 people who are food insecure in this area, less than 5% are homeless. The 95% of that number are people who are actually holding down multiple jobs to be able to make ends meet, but because this region is becoming so expensive to live in, because they may face unexpected medical expenses, because they may be one car repair too many this particular month or year, all of those things tend to squeeze their budgets. And unfortunately, the food portion of that budget is the one that ends up being squeezed the most, resulting in individuals who start to skip meals or they have less nutritious meals in order to be able to make some of those other payments as well.
You know, that's fascinating to me, Jennifer. You're out in Northern Virginia.
That's right.
And certainly, as Radha just explained, there may be circumstances that prevent families or individuals from eating because what? Is the money going to the rent? Is the money going to as Rada suggested, the car repair? Is it going to a pair of shoes so that the children can help me with that?
I think it's going to a lot of those places. We like to think that poverty does not happen in a silo. So there's lots of factors that influence someone's decision or ability to buy nutritious food. Alive also provides what we call emergency assistance. And that's for people who may be behind on a utility bill and need a little extra help, a medical bill, or they need help with rent. So we try to also help people with those kinds of things so that when the budget's tight, they're not also losing their food security. Food is often the last thing. So if you have a child who's sick, your car breaks down, you can't get to work, you work two jobs, you have a lot of rent, then that budget gets really tight and it's really hard to afford food in the area. The cost of living is high.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about our food to feed effort 2019. We have a radiothon as we do every year from 6 in the morning until 6 in the evening. And my guests are talking about specifically why there is a need for us to continue to do this. And a lot of people may be surprised because we do have listeners who just through, you know, the course of this conversation, we talk to them every day on the air and they're doing fine. They're doing well. Kids in college, you know, great jobs. You know, everyone has issues. But I'm just, you know, wondering, you know, there is another part of the DMV culture that isn't able to consistently feed themselves. Is this a kind of situation where you know, you have this set amount, you have this pot of money at home, and you're doing all of these things, and you get to the end and you say, okay, I'm good, and then you open the pantry and then you realize, oh my goodness, I forgot about this. Is that the kind of thing we're talking about here?
I think there are different ways that hunger, you know, is manifests itself. So I'll talk about a few different examples here. You know, it could be someone who is working two or three minimum wage jobs, you know, trying to juggle sort of childcare needs, transportation, all of those types of things. He or she, you know, has some income to be able to devote towards purchasing food, but they may also be, you know, supported through some government programs that might provide, you know, food stamps and other types of things. But often there may be a few days a month mm-hmm. where they need that extra support. So for some of them, yes, it does manifest itself in terms of that last week of the month needing some additional mm-hmm. support and coming to the food bank and its vast network of 450 partners in this region to be able to get that support. So that's sort of one profile, if you will. Another profile is, for example, one that we're seeing increasingly in our region now is grandparents, so seniors mm-hmm. who didn't anticipate that they would have to take care of grandkids full time, but mm-hmm. now are mm-hmm. faced with that situation. Mm-hmm. And so for them, they may have budgeted and planned for their retirement, but without thinking about, you know, food, clothing, tutoring, things like that for a 7-year-old or 14-year-old, or food, you know, and the food needs in terms of what they might need after school, dinner, weekends, summer meals, things like that. So that in itself could put them into the category of food insecure, just because they might have been secure for themselves, but now that they've got two or three or more grandkids who are staying with them full time, there isn't adequate support for that. So then they end up also having to avail of the services of the Emergency Food Assistance Network in this area. Mm-hmm. A third example I'll give, and then you know we can go on, is veterans in this area, right? So we're seeing also active duty military personnel as well as veterans who are transitioning from their military jobs to civilian jobs, and often there's a process of retooling and skill building, and while they're going through that process, they're having to, you know, just depend on existing benefits, which may not cover, again, you know, both Jennifer and I have mm-hmm. talked about the increase in cost of living mm-hmm. in this area and other things. So they might need some temporary assistance or perhaps even some longer term assistance. So the profile of those who are hungry is quite varied in this region. And it's not sort of typically, I think, what comes to mind when people think of those who are in need of food.
The other
group I would add is our new immigrants. And we're seeing that especially in Alexandria on our our west side of our city. We have a lot of new immigrant communities coming here either as refugees or just because they have other family in the area, and they're just having a harder time, and they face more barriers in terms of language and accessibility to jobs. So they often don't know how to access the city support services that they need to get the food support. So at the end of the month, again, or even during the month, they're finding themselves a little bit short on food.
And that is, again, and, you know, the most powerful region in the world, realizing that, you know, there are families that are going, you know, hungry, or individuals that are going, you know, hungry. Jeffrey just inboxed me on Facebook, and he said he's been working with this population for nearly 16 years. He talked about, you know, many homeless people do work. Mm-hmm. And he said, but some people earn too much for food stamps, but don't have enough for rent. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about the plain sight comment that I made. And that to me is really frightening, when you may live in a, you know, in a middle class, working class community, and your next door neighbor has, a decent home. Or if they're renting, you know, they're good people. They go to work every single day, but the thought that they are not eating is really frightening to me.
And to your point, and to the, you know, contributor's point, listener's point, hunger does not discriminate in this region. So it is in every single zip code, in every mm-hmm. single neighborhood. It doesn't discriminate by age or by race, and those who've been here a long time, right. or those who've just immigrated.
Right.
So there is, it's everywhere. And I think what we've seen in our distributions, I mentioned we distribute through 450 partners. Alive is one of them, and our biggest partner in Alexandria. But we also find that we have to have what we call 300 direct distributions, where a food bank truck will roll up and set up what looks like a farmer's market, but everything there is provided for free.
Really?
We have 300 of those because we're really looking at all of the hunger hotspots in this area, and some of those aren't covered by partners, and so we need to be able to get food to all of those who are hungry. And you'd be surprised that, you know, there'd be a 5, 6, 8 block area that is adjacent to two very wealthy areas, mm-hmm. but it is in between. And so those are the areas that are in need, and people who are in need of food.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about our annual Food to Feed effort. This is Food to Feed 2019. Our radiothon, of course, tomorrow, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., and we invite you to join us. But we also invite you, if you want to lend a hand right now, you can go to our website at whur.com. You can contribute online. Certainly, we are looking tomorrow for financial contributions and the like. If you want to stop by the WHUR studios, we'll be more than happy to take, whether it's cash or a check or the like. But also, contributions of food, as always, you know, non-perishables, things that families can really use. And I'm going to get into that a little bit later. But first, I want to go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jenna, calling from Gaithersburg. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I wanted to make a comment to this. I'm so happy to finally get through for a subject that's very important. I just want to say that for me, I have been in that situation. I've worked on my job for years. The thing is that things go up, rents are expensive, but you don't make enough money to provide for other things. You know, you don't get raises. You don't get, you know, you're just getting cost of living, but you're not getting the raise that will accommodate the rise in rent and groceries and clothing and stuff for your kids. I've been in that situation where I worked, I made money, but I just couldn't afford food for my kids. And what I would do is get food, and my kids would divide it up just so I could have a piece of theirs, and I would make sure just they would have enough to eat. It's very hard for people out here. Things are very, very high. You know, the economy and housing and stuff is constantly going up. But people are not making money to make things, you know, make ends meet. And you want to live in areas where your kids will be safe. So either you're going to live in a decent area or you're not. And then when you try to go down and get assistance, you make too much to get assistance. To tell me with four kids that I can only get $25 a month because I made a couple of dollars over what they were required, that was very hard and hurting to me. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, what is $25 going to do for five people in a home?
Yeah. Gina, thank you so much for sharing with us. And I think, you know, that's one of the things, you know, Jennifer, that a lot of people are really kind of struggling with, because we have seen the change, not only locally, but you know, across the country. You know, benefits for working families and the working poor have been significantly reduced. Mm-hmm. The rules have changed, mm-hmm. you know, considerably. And families that used to get, you know, what we called food stamps, now they call it EBT mm-hmm. or whatever it happens to be, they're not getting as much. And there are just some barriers.
Yeah, there's a lot of barriers. You know, so that's one of the reasons why we're out there. We distribute food on the last Saturday of every month. And the idea is that if your benefits run out, we can give you 5 days of groceries to take home. So we get out there in three different locations in Alexandria. One is primarily senior citizens. One is on our north end, and that's a little bit of everybody. And then on our west end, again, pretty diverse crowd over there. And we're seeing about 300 to 500 people at each site every Saturday. So we're distributing about 15,000 tons of food. And a lot of that does come from Capital Area Food Bank. And we also glean from our farmers market. So the rents keep going up. We keep hearing anecdotally stories of families sharing three or four families to a two-bedroom apartment, and even if we send groceries home through school, not being able to store them. So the cost of living, you know, the pace of our cost of living does not keep up with those wages. I think she was spot on. Mm. And it's just the demand is high. Yeah.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk to Linda calling from Northern Virginia. Also, Etta, she inboxed me. And she had a really interesting comment. She was saying that, you know, working daily, paying rent, making a choice between buying food or paying utilities, it's a common problem. She said we need a better system. Etta, thank you so much for sharing with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Food to Feed tomorrow, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. We're going to continue this conversation on Sirius XM, channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation and your phone calls next on 202-319-7810 on Sirius XM, channel 141. We'll be back in a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about our annual Food to Feed 2019 Radiothon. It is tomorrow from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. But we encourage you to start right now if you want to make a financial contribution that will go to helping thousands of families. Tens of thousands, I would argue, in the D.C. Metro. You can go to our website at WHUR.com and you can make a contribution to our annual Food to Feed 2019 effort. Radha Muthaya, she is CEO of the Capital Area Food Bank, and Jennifer Ayers, Executive Director of Alive Incorporated. They're here in studio talking about this event tomorrow, the need in our community, and giving some information that a lot of you may very well not be wholly familiar with or really understand what's happening when it comes to hunger in our community. Shabak Ministries is always with us. They were unable to attend tonight. They will be in full effect tomorrow, as they have been for many, many years, as partners with this effort. I want to go back to the phone lines. Linda at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, calling from Northern Virginia. What's on your mind, Linda?
Yeah, first of all, I just want to say thank you all for, you know, talking about this. But me coming from Northern Virginia and a middle-class area, one thing that I've seen is that with children, as they are growing, they require more. And the parents, like, I have a daughter who has some children, and it's kind of hard helping her living in a separate house because she's working two jobs. But she has children that are growing, requiring more, like clothing. They have to pay for every event that they're involved in. And so then she has to make decisions on what it is that she has to pay for, not to mention her going back and forward to work, car breaking down, utilities, everything that they do. The students now is online. So it's a lot of things that is required for the children that parents have to decide on what they're going to pay for and what they're not in order to have their children, like, live a normal life.
Yeah. Linda, thank you so much for sharing that. And I think that goes back to something that you were saying earlier, Radha, about, for example, the grandparents. It's one thing to... And to perhaps help adult children, their adult children, but to help grandchildren. Children eat a lot.
They do.
They eat a lot. Like Linda just said, they're growing. They need not just food; they need nutrition. Growing bodies, strong bones, strong teeth. The whole bit. And if you're not getting nutritious sustenance, that can lead to all kinds of problems.
No, absolutely. Good food, as we all know, fuels the mind, and that's particularly important for young children. And so the food bank has multiple different programs that are geared towards children, all the way from, new programs we're launching from birth, to programs that we've had for some time in elementary, middle, and high school, high schools as well in the area. So what we do is provide food that is not just appropriate for the school child, but also for their families. We know that if a child is hungry, chances are there are others in that family who are hungry as well. So we have family markets that are operational after school ends. So it could be on a Wednesday or a Thursday afternoon, usually around 3 or 4, in elementary schools when parents or a caregiver comes to pick up the child. We know that transportation can be a barrier as well, so we don't want to have them come back multiple times to go to the market. So we set it up right at the end of school. And so families are able to pick up their kids as well as sort of walk through, a corridor or a gymnasium or a cafeteria that's lined with fresh produce, some, frozen protein, milk, as well as healthy shelf-stable products to be able to get the right type of food for their kids. One thing the food bank has been doing for years now is ensuring that we provide healthy food, not just any food, but healthy, nutritious food. Mm-hmm. And we are proud to say that 80 to 84% of everything that's distributed from the food bank, and we distribute a lot, 38 million pounds of food a year, 80 to 84% is healthy. So it's low sugar, low sodium, high in fiber. And about a third of all of that is fresh fruits and vegetables.
How do you know that it's 38 million pounds? I mean, do you weigh it? How do you I hear these numbers which is not to say that I'm not taking it at face value. It's just to say I'm not taking it at face value. I want to know, how do you know that?
You really Absolutely. Have to weigh it, because we need to figure out how we're distributing. So if we're trying to think about 5 days' worth of groceries, we're figuring about a pound and a half per person per day. So we have to know how much everything weighs, and what we get in, and we measure that, we sort it, and then we bag up our groceries for home deliveries and for our pantries based on what they need. So we do measure what goes out and what goes in pounds and in tons. And we can really mix that up depending on what we have in our stores. So if we're going to schools, we try to get individual servings so that kids can take those home and heat them up on their own. If we have a pantry that looks a little bit more like what you're talking about with fresh produce and protein, then we're going to make sure we're giving a box that has the right amount for that particular group. So that measuring is really important.
It is. And when you've got such a large volume that you're bringing in for the region, it also matters in terms of understanding that you've got enough by product category,
right.
So dairy, protein, produce, etc. So our food that comes in, you know, about 60% of it is donated. So donated from retailers, wholesalers, large food drives in the area. So that comes into the food bank. And then another 20% is U.S. government food. So those who are who fit the criteria, if you will, to be seniors, young children, to be able to qualify, working families for the food, about 20% of our food is from USDA. The other 20% we are purchasing. And so increasingly, as donations start to decline, and we can talk about why that is, you know, but as donations are declining, we are having to purchase more and more of the food that's provided to the region. So one distinction, which I think sometimes gets confusing for listeners and others, is sort of the difference between a food bank and a food pantry. So a food bank, there's only one in the area, and that's the Capital Area Food Bank. And we bring in food that we then distribute through various partners and direct distributions. So that then goes out like a bank, sort of receiving, you know, funds as well as, you know, deposits, and then making loans or you know, that's a similar type of concept, but with food.
With no loan.
With no loan. It doesn't come back.
You know, it doesn't come back. No. Right.
It doesn't come back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's typically how we work. And the donations, I mentioned retail donations are going down. You know, grocery stores are that much more efficient in terms of their supply chains, just in time, you know, ability to understand, okay, if they purchase a head of lettuce, they think it'll sell in 3 days, and so they, you know, just purchase enough for it to sit on their shelves before it gets sold. So we are seeing fewer donations and definitely fewer consistent donations on fresh fruits and vegetables. So a good portion of what we use our monetary donations to purchase are fresh fruits and vegetables at scale so that we can provide them to Alive, to Shabak, and to others so that they have those fresh fruits and vegetables in addition to shelf-stable items to be able to deliver to clients.
So, Jennifer, do people donate to Alive? I mean, if they see you or your staff doing your jobs, you know, in the community, and they want to make a contribution, do you send them to the food bank? Do you say, go ahead and donate? How do you?
We also collect food from food drives and from local partners, supermarkets, and farmers markets and places like that. But we are constantly receiving food. We also, when we don't have enough of, we go and we talk to Capital Area Food Bank and we say, hey, we have a shortage of meat. We get most of our meat actually and protein sources from Capital Area Food Bank. So we would go and purchase that at a very low cost from Capital Area Food Bank. And then we would distribute it. So we want to round out our meals. So we get a lot of shelf-stable food. We get, you know, all the cans you can think of, pasta, all the good stuff, but we also need the fresh stuff. So the fresh stuff comes from retailers or from Capital Area Food Bank. And the retailers, like Radka says, they are cutting back on some of that fresh stuff. So the last, I'm not going to say which retailer, but we had a big donation of Ho-Hos. Like, you can't, those aren't healthy for us. Nobody wants them. So we want to make sure we're getting those healthy donations in. And we store them. We have a warehouse that's actually belongs to the city of Alexandria, that Alive and a couple other partners really use to store and distribute food. So what we get in, we try to get back out as fast as we can. So through the last Saturday, also do home deliveries, and we supply pantries within the city and a few schools. So again, they can sort of, we try to customize those depending on who we're serving. So if we're going to seniors, we try to get them foods they like. If we're going to the West End, they're requesting lentils. If we're going to the North End, they want more fresh produce. So we're trying to really match our donations with the cultural and needs and the preferences of the people we're serving.
That's really good to hear when you're talking about being, culturally sensitive, culturally competent, because if you're not, then it's very likely that you could develop waste,
right?
And the folks who do want those products, they may be missing out if they're going to the wrong communities.
Right. We're also trying to educate, so they could be going to the wrong communities, and just letting people know that what's safe to eat, and trying to teach people different ways to use food. So we have cooking demonstrations at one of our sites. People don't want to use canned goods, but hey, you can make some really good, tasty things with canned food. Capital Area Food Bank even supplies us with recipe cards. So
I love canned
food. We can,
absolutely.
Yep. But if you didn't grow up eating it, you're like, oh, I wouldn't eat anything out of a can. You know, so we want people to understand that it's safe to eat. Also, you know, you look at those sell-by dates, and that doesn't actually mean the food is bad. So we don't want food that's 7 years old, which sometimes we get. People clean out their pantries. We want pretty current food, but it is safe to eat for a few months, even sometimes to a year after that sell-by date. So we're trying to educate people on what they can donate and what they can be used.
What are the, if you could share with our listeners some of the do's of donating food and some don'ts, types of food. I mean, mm-hmm. you kind of mm-hmm. went through the mm-hmm. healthy thing, but more specifically, like for example, ho-hos. So what happens to the ho-hos?
We ended up giving them out in small batches, but most people don't really want that kind of food. They want stuff that's right. healthy that they can prepare and make into other meals, make it last for a while. Our families, most of them want stuff that's very easy to make, especially if you have two working parents and there's a bunch of kids at home. So they want single-serve oatmeal. They want pancake mix, not the kind you add the egg, because then you need to have eggs, just the kind you add water to, because it's very simple, it's shelf-stable, you can feed a lot of people with it. So there's things like that just can make multiple meals with, and that are very simple to make. So that seems to be the most requested. And then we're seeing more and more requests for single serve item. So I would say don't bring us, like when you're cleaning out, you're going on a new diet and you want to get rid of like all your old food. Mm-hmm. Don't bring us that. Don't bring us stuff that is strange. Like we don't want clam juice, or sardines or things like that. If you won't eat it, chances are nobody else wants to eat it either. So that's kind of the rule I keep in mind.
And that's a really important point. I think that, think about what you would want to serve your kids and your mm-hmm. grandkids mm-hmm. and think about, the neighbors in need and how they would want to serve the same types of things for their kids. The other thing I would add mm-hmm. to the good list that Jennifer's provided is just staple products. Mm-hmm. And so whether it's peanut butter, it's mm-hmm. pasta, or if you're living in a community, which increasingly we are, that's diverse, then think about, is it masa flour, rice noodles, soy sauce, mm-hmm. things that are staples in a variety of different cultures. And if you don't know, don't guess. So you can go onto our website, mm-hmm. capillaryfoodbank.org, and we have a list of sort of commonly requested things. So mm-hmm. if you're not sure, then there are lots of places to turn to determine what that.
I think Jennifer, you made mm-hmm. a really interesting, point. And I mean, obviously you didn't say, but I, as the host of the show, I'm going to say and get mad if you want. If you're going to donate, think about what you're
right.
doing.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, be, even in the attempt to be kind, you must also be thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking about what I have in my cabinet that I do eat, because I'm a food shopper. I only buy what I'm going to mm-hmm. eat. There are on Friday before I go to the grocery store, my refrigerator is virtually empty because I buy it, I eat mm-hmm. it, I cook it. I don't have anything. I don't have excess.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me that's wasteful, but I do have the individual packets of oatmeal,
mm-hmm.
and you're right, it is easy, mm-hmm. it is quick, and it is. I mean, you can have the debate about the sugar and all of that, but it's better. It's better to have the oatmeal than the Count Chocula bread.
It really is
exactly.
You,
yeah. But when you mention the pancake mix. You're absolutely right, because you have the pancake or waffle mix or whatever that you only need to add water to.
Right.
But then you have the other that requires egg, that mm-hmm. that may require milk mm-hmm. and the like. And when you're talking about a struggling family, you've got that big box of pancake mix and all you need is just water from the faucet, as opposed to a gallon of milk, and Lord knows milk is so expensive. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And eggs can be expensive also, but when you're really counting nickels and dimes, it really can make a difference. And that's the kind of thing that I think is so important for people to understand, is to be thoughtful. And I think the other thing, and I'm really curious about this, because we saw this during the federal government shutdown earlier this year. That was some heartbreaking stuff. And mm-hmm. I'm quite sure that both of you saw during the federal government shutdown some people who were needing the assistance, some food assistance, who heretofore never did.
That's right. You know, we had several pop-up markets during the month of January, and this was a completely different base of, you know, client, if you will, for us. These are government workers who typically would not avail of the emergency food assistance network in this area. But because of the timing of the shutdown and the length of the shutdown, they needed to. So as your listeners will recall, that was, you know, late December and the month of January. So, you know, credit card bills after the holiday season. And so not getting those paychecks in January really hurt people significantly. In our pop-up markets, we saw over 30 government agencies, employees from over 30 government agencies line up. We had, you know, one Saturday, we were anticipating perhaps, you know, 250 to 300 people. We saw 1,400 people show up to avail of food. And so many of them said, you know, thank you for doing this, but we're a little embarrassed that we have to be in this line. We're usually your volunteers. I've donated to you before, you know, things like that. But it really showed that people are just sometimes, you know, just a few sort of degrees away or steps away, in this case, paychecks away, from being in a situation where they are uncertain where that next meal is going to come from. So I think as a community, we should remember that. It was a very important lesson about, you know, how we are, all of us aren't that far away, you know, if we're not getting paid, and how it takes the entire community to come together to support our neighbors in need.
Do you find that there are certain times of the year where the food bank needs more contributions than at other times of the year? We do this every year, and it often coincides with the Thanksgiving holiday. But what about the other 11 months of the year? Where are you finding the biggest struggles or challenges in keeping the pantries full and keeping the food bank able to make, you know, to send out those loans.
Look, we need to eat every day of the, of the year. So in that sense, the need is year-round. Of course, during the end-of-year holidays, people are thinking about food, you know, and thinking about those in need. But the need is throughout the year. I will say what's interesting is that we're typically lowest on inventory right in the new year. So sort of January, February, we are, you know, just because we've had an influx of donations, you know, October, November, December, and a lot of it is going out and people are entertaining and, you know, things like that, and they need more food. So the early part of the calendar year is typically when we're lowest. Having said that, this year we have had one of our biggest food drives actually not result in the quantity of food that we would typically get during this time of year. So your food drive tomorrow is perfectly timed because we are actually quite short this year in terms of food supplies and are now looking at multiple other sources to be able to replenish the food bank and thus, you know, share with our partners for these end of year holidays.
Yeah, for Alive, I mean, we would love to have a food drive in July or August. That is when we are seeing the lowest inventory of food available. So that's when we have to go out to our partner, the Capillary Food Bank, and ask for more because that's when our donations really start to.
Why in July and August?
I think we get a lot at the end of the year, and we get a lot around, because we're a faith-based group, we get a lot around Easter and that time of year, and then it just sort of, our inventory just sort of wanes. So people forget about donations and they get involved and they leave for the summer, and so our inventory just can't keep pace.
Do you find in this day and age any donation fatigue or charity fatigue? Because it just seems like everyone is asking for assistance of some kind. We have natural disasters. One of the issues is that a lot of our listeners, including my family, we have family in the Bahamas. Okay. And they were, you know, particularly, they were hit particularly hard this year. And so, with the kinds of challenges that so many communities have and you could call it subcultures of the communities, what impact does that have on the donations?
It does. It has an impact. I think what is important for people to remember is that this issue of food that we're talking about, it's just fundamental. It's foundational. You can't really do much if you don't have food to eat. And so that is, it's important to be able to think of, you know, a basic contribution and a continued sustainable contribution in that area. But I agree with you. There are lots of different competing, if you will, interests and causes, all of which, you know, have a place and are important. We just tend to think of it as food being foundational, and we try and bundle the food that we're providing with other support services. Mm-hmm. So we do bundle food with education, with healthcare, with skill building, knowing that it's often multiple basic support services that are required. And if people know there's food that's being provided, you know, in addition to the other service, you will see that's a huge draw. You'll see a huge attendance, et cetera, there. So we feel that by providing food, we're also supporting the other basic services that people are in need of. So you really can't go wrong by providing food or funds to support food efforts.
So do you have the capacity to store, you know, meats? I know you spoke about proteins, but, you know, and I'm thinking about, you know, turkeys and, you know, and the like, or, you know, hamburger. And do you have the ability to do
that? We can do some. They certainly have, Capillary Area Food Bank has much more storage than we do. So we can store for a short time, but we can only store probably about one of our monthly distributions at a time. So once we're full, we get our food out. So turkeys for us, for example, we're getting a bunch of turkeys in, they have to go out the next day. So we just don't have that much storage. And in some cases, they go out the same day we get them. So for us, it's a lot of coordination of volunteers with the city personnel that's recommending who gets them to make sure that they get in and get out as fast as possible, because we do not have that extra freezer space where we are.
And that's how we try to support our partners. We have, you know, over 100,000 square foot facility. You know, quite a bit of that is refrigerated and freezer space. And so we're aware of the storage constraints that our partners have. And that's why we have a fleet of trucks, you know, many, if not all of which are refrigerated, to be able to make those deliveries, you know, just in time for some, in some cases, for the distributions that our partners will have. So it's a very well aligned system, I would say, amongst our partners and ourselves. It's a close knit community that way, that fully understands sort of what each brings to the table. You know, we store turkeys, we're storing Thanksgiving pies for one of our partners right now. So there is an understanding that ultimately we're here to provide food to those who need it. And if those of us who have space or greater purchasing power can play that role to reduce the costs of getting the food to those who need it, then we play that role.
Now, you know, for Alive, you deal directly with the people in the community who have needs. But can someone come to the food bank if they have a need, or do you direct them to your partners, such as Alive?
So we definitely, there are people who walk up to the food bank.
Because I would think, you know, if I have a family, we're hungry, food bank,
And people do come, and we'll make sure they don't leave empty-handed. But that is not what we recommend. So, you know, people can go online to Capital Area Food Bank. There's a Get Help button. You can put in your zip code, and you see a list of our partners, you know, who are closest to where you live. If people call our hunger hotline, we will ask them where they live, and then we will direct them. If they're in Alexandria, chances are it's Alive, you know, or a few of our other partners there. Shabak plays a huge role for us in Prince George's County. In fact, they're a produce hub for us as well. So many other partners will come to Shabak to get produce and take back, you know, to their areas. So we're able to direct them to one of our many partners. And if there isn't a partner in the neighborhood where they are, then we'll tell them about one of our 300 direct distributions that happen during the course of the year.
How do you decide who gets what? And I don't mean what. I mean, for example, it's one thing if you just have, you know, husband and wife. But if you have, you know, husband and wife who also happen to be mother and father with five kids, how do you determine how much they are given in any one visit?
Oh, interesting question. I'm not sure I know that there's a perfect answer. For our last Saturday food distribution, we look at the household size and we try to calculate at least 5 days worth of groceries for that family. So that could be a family of one, it could be a family of six. So we look at that and make sure everybody gets enough food. So they come and they line up early and we see how big they are and we get rid of all our food. So everybody is getting something. And we'll use as much as we have. And usually it's enough for 5 days. For some people, we deliver groceries to them. So that's, again, based on the size of their household. Usually it's enough for 3 to 5 days, depending on what we have. So it's sort of an art form. And then for our pantries, we take their requests. So they'll say, oh, we need jelly this week. We get a lot of peanut butter, but not jelly. So, you know, so we will try to find jelly. Or they need protein. So we'll look for tuna fish, canned chicken, things like that that we can supplement. So they are sort of telling us what they need, and then we try to find it.
Because yeah. I was wondering if you have, for example, someone may show up at one of the distribution centers, and there may be five kids, but the kids are in school.
Right.
And so so you may only have the husband and wife, or you may only have the wife, or you may only have the husband because she's working.
Yeah, we don't really check anything. You know, Eli's philosophy is if you come and you ask, we're gonna give you something to help you get through it. And that's really what's nice about Alive. Since we were founded as a community of faith, we have all different types of people and congregations coming together. So if there's a need that we can do, we're going to do it. No questions asked.
And what Jennifer and I have been talking about also is that how we are trying to better understand at least household size, you know, what different families like more of or less of. Right. And so there's, you know, essentially a system that we're looking to deploy across our partners so that as clients come to Alive and take, you know, different items off the shelf, so to speak, you know, then we're able to get a sense that, okay, there are many large households, you know, that they are serving. And by the way, there's great interest in jelly and canned tuna.
Right.
And so we're able then to procure or provide specifically those types of things to be able to meet their needs. So just as any private company would, you know, we're using some systems now to better understand our clients and their needs so that we can better meet them.
Right.
I think this is a great place to in this conversation, but it really is an ending because, as I've said throughout this hour, we definitely want you to go to our website at whur.com. Please make a contribution of any size tomorrow for our Food to Feed 2019 Radiothon. You can do it tonight. You don't have to wait until tomorrow. We're doing something interesting. We've got a rolling food drive as well. You'll hear more about that on tomorrow, so please certainly listen. And Radha Muthiah, as well as Jennifer Ayers, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us. And also, you know, God bless you for the work that you're doing. Really, really appreciate
it. So thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Monday, November 18th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.